compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, welcome back. This is hour three, and as you'll see, in an hour's time, it's going to go by very quickly. So I encourage you, if you want to call me at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Do you use Lyft? Cyrus, do you use Lyft? Do you ever use those ride-sharing programs?
Is that like an Uber?
Yeah, it's like Uber. It's a competitor.
You know, I think I used it once, yeah.
Well, you might want to think again. Alexandra DeSanctis, she has an article it's actually a tweet on Twitter, and she says, where did it go? Here it is. She points out that Lyft has sent an email to all of its customers opposing the Texas Heartbeat Act that we've talked about on the program. The company is also donating $1 million to Planned Parenthood. And here's from Lyft. It says, this law is incompatible with people's basic rights to privacy, our community guidelines, the spirit of rideshare, and our values as a company. We are taking action on two fronts. Lyft has created a driver legal defense fund to cover 100% of legal fees for drivers sued under SB 8 while driving on our platform. Riders and drivers, nothing about how you drive, ride, or interact with each other should change. And two, Texas SB 8 is an attack on women's rights to choose. Lyft is donating $1 million to Planned Parenthood to help ensure that transportation is never a barrier to health care access. Yeah. Now, I thought to myself when I saw this the last day or so, I thought, okay, well, I've never used Lyft anyway. I've always used Uber. Then I come to find out that Uber is doing something similar. I guess they don't want to be left behind. So just FYI, those of you, if you're using a ride-sharing service, be aware of their social irresponsibility. Now, here's another example of this, but in a somewhat different direction. The web hosting company GoDaddy, they terminated the website for the Texas pro-life tip organization. Now, in the CNBC article, it's not listed that way. It's talked about as an anti-abortion tip website. That's fine. I don't care. Call me anti-abortion. I don't care. I am anti-abortion. There's no shame in that. You know, I'm anti-slavery. I'm anti-abortion. No problem. So CNBC is reporting it as website hosting service GoDaddy said it will terminate services for the owner of an anti-abortion website that allows people to report suspected abortions in response to the new Texas law that imposes a near total ban on abortion. The company said last night we informed ProLifeWhistleblower.com. Write that down, ProLifeWhistleblower.com. They have violated GoDaddy's terms of service and have 24 hours to move to a different provider. Texas Right to Life, the group owning the website, in a statement said it will not be silenced, adding that it would put its website back up. They said our IT team is already in, is already in process of transferring our assets to another provider. I don't know what's going on with my throat. I'm not getting choked up.
I feel like I need to add some mood music here.
yeah.
We'll try this one out.
Is this Planned Parenthood mood music?
This is just a yes and
oh, I get it.
It goes to all of it. This is when you're getting into your lift, knowing that maybe the ride that the guy gave right before you was taking a woman to Planned Parenthood.
Maybe so. Or maybe this is what they should play in the Uber or the Lyft cars, knowing that your money is going to go to helping big abortion. That's a good soundtrack. I like that. Now, back to GoDaddy for just a second. The article points out, not too big a surprise, that GoDaddy may not have the raunchy public image it once promoted, but it's now the official registry for tens of thousands of porn-related domain names. Now, think about that for a second. GoDaddy has long been known to be a purveyor of porn in many forms. It's public record. Now, isn't there a connection maybe between watching pornography and acting out and getting pregnant? And of course, big abortion needs customers. They need customers coming through the door every day to keep that big money machine going. And so I see a correlation here between purveyors of porn websites, because obviously that's going to feed into the bigger picture that in some way or another for some people will result in pregnancies, which will result in abortions. So if you have GoDaddy as your provider, I would personally, I'd pull the plug on them. Absolutely.
It appears we must redefine the nature of our association.
That is a good hotkey right there. So now let's go up to Canada for a minute, then we'll go to the phone calls. Check it out. Canada, not all of Canada yet anyway, but the Canadian province of Ontario, their school commission, is now burning books, like big bonfires of books. They're burning them. So far, about 5,000 have been burned. Now, this is I got this from El País, which is a Spanish, from Spain, a Spanish newspaper. I read that this morning. So they're destroying books, both in English and in French, and they include characters such as Asterix and Tintin. These are children's books, and they're destroying them now. They're burning them because they believe that they are inappropriate or offensive to indigenous people. So the public this organization for the province is tasked with finding these books that the commission deems to be problematic. The committee found that these particular books displayed, among other points, erroneous historical accounts, racist and discriminatory images, sexualization and disrespectful treatment of cultural practices. I doubt that. It also eliminated those that contained the terms Indian and Eskimo, considered pejorative for several years. The destroyed works include copies of Asterix and Tintin, as well as encyclopedias, novels, and short stories aimed at children. In all, 155 different titles failed the committee's test and got thrown onto the bonfire of burning books. They're burning books. They're destroying books. And the reason is because they, first of all, deem that these things are offensive. Not everybody does, but they do. And they're going to control what you are allowed to think and see. They don't want you to have wrong thoughts. So as a way to avoid that, they're going to censor what you're allowed to see and what you're allowed to think. Now, juxtapose that, of course, with the onslaught of books that are being foisted upon kids in school, the same kids, as a matter of fact, that are promoting the gender ideology and critical race theory and other nonsense. They're being promoted into the schools as a way to shape their attitudes, and things that might be somewhat controversial now are being withheld from the kids because they're landing on the bonfire. So just be aware of that happening. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Helen in Rhode Island. Hi, Helen.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question about purgatory. I'm writing down all the people who sent cards to my husband after he passed. I got 116 cards. 66
wow.
of them had a mass that was being offered for him, or enrollment, or even perpetual enrollment. And my question is, how can a person not be in, and there was hundreds of people at the funeral, how can a person not be in heaven after all that? And I know in the Old Testament it says we have to offer prayers for the dead, but Jesus died and redeemed us. That should be enough. I pray for the holy souls in purgatory every single day. So
that's
it's
good.
Not that I'm against the holy souls in purgatory. And I want to know, too, how can we be peaceful about letting our people go if we think that if they're in purgatory, they're still suffering more than they ever did in life? That's my question.
Two very good questions. So the first one hinges upon understanding the nature of sin. You're right. Jesus Christ redeems us. He saves us from our own sins by his death on the cross. And that is true, but we have to understand that that is part of the effects of sin. So one effect of sin is the eternal penalty that is due to sin, and that Jesus pays for by his death on the cross. And only he can do that. We can't save ourselves. We can't merit salvation. So you're right about that. But there's a second part, and that is the temporal effect due to sin. So if we look at it maybe in an earthly way, you might embezzle $10,000 from your employer and then have pangs of conscience and remorse and turn yourself into your employer and you say, I'm really sorry, I embezzled $10,000 and I feel terrible and I want to confess that I've done this. And imagine if your employer was so forgiving that he said, well, okay, because you came to me and you told me this, we'll treat it as if it never happened, but don't do it again. And you say, oh, okay, great, I won't do it again, I promise. And then as you're walking out of the office, he says, now you have to repay the $10,000 that you embezzled. So there we see a kind of parallel where the boss, if you want to use the analogy, is like God who forgives you. He could have you arrested and you would go to jail, but he forgives you. And that penalty that is due to your embezzlement crime it's not applied to you. But in restitution, in justice, you still have the obligation to repay the $10,000 that you embezzled from the company. And that's a matter of justice. So if we can use this analogy, whenever you or I commit a sin, there's a twofold effect, the eternal penalty due to sin and then the temporal effects due to sin. And purgatory is where the temporal effects due to sin are removed, and you're purified of the effects of the sin, not from the penalty itself. Again, only Jesus can do that. So when a soul goes to purgatory, we're told by the experts on the topic, the saints and doctors and fathers of the church who comment on this, that the soul wants to go there. I mean, none of us wants to go there, but when the soul, after this life is over, realizes the immense, endless love that God has for each one of us and how we are intended to be with God forever in heaven, that the soul does not want to approach heaven until he or she has been completely purified. And so, although it is a place of great pain, it's a place of great suffering, it's a joyful kind of suffering because those who are in purgatory know that they are going to be forever with God in heaven in due time. Now, as for the question you asked about your husband and all the many masses that were celebrated for him, which is fantastic, all other things being equal, the likelihood of him going to heaven sooner rather than later is quite high. And assuming that he didn't have a tremendous amount of temporal effects due to sin on his soul that needed to be purified, it may well be that he went to heaven very quickly. And there's a lot of reason to hope and pray for that. I would still continue to pray for him just in case, but there's no reason why with all of those masses, if he died in the state of grace, that he may well have gone to heaven much faster, you see. Does that make more sense?
Well, it does, but if I paid for some, I mean, just this is a natural thing. If someone could not, like we can't make, if someone could not pay for something that they really, really needed, and I could, mm-hmm. and I did, mm-hmm. I wouldn't expect them, I really wouldn't, if they didn't have what they needed, I wouldn't expect them to pay me back at all. I would expect that they would be grateful, and I would expect that they would do something for somebody else, pass it forward. But I wouldn't expect them, and that's, I'm just a person. I'm not Jesus. I'm not God.
Right. But God is, don't reason. See, you're looking through the telescope at the wrong end. Don't say just because I wouldn't do this, therefore God wouldn't do it. That's the wrong way to reason. Let's see what God says about himself. God is all just. He's all merciful, but he's also all just. And so in justice, justice demands restitution. And many sins, most sins probably, you can't have a kind of exact restitution, because it's not like if you stole $100, you pay back $100. With all the other sins that we're capable of committing, there's no way to say, well, here's exactly what the restitution is. So this is where penance comes in, because penance is a way of expiating those temporal effects due to sin. Now, you may be, you know, one in a million where if the neighbor kid who is playing baseball in your front yard broke your plate glass window, you may be the one in a million woman who says, ah, don't worry about it, I'll pay for it. But in justice, because he's the one who did it, and if it, especially if it's something that he was told not to do, there is an obligation there for him to repair the damage that he has done. And so I would just say, keep that in mind. God is just and he's merciful. And you and I might give somebody a pass, but the justice in this case must be satisfied. So take, for example, Jesus came to save us from our sins. And the first people who committed sins were Adam and Eve. And they started the catastrophe with their fall from paradise. And they were forgiven. I mean, we can presume that Adam and Eve were forgiven. They repented of their sins and they were forgiven. But they still had to live in a fallen state. Eventually, they would die. So all of the temporal effects due to their sin still remained, even if they themselves were saved eventually and they went to heaven eventually. Nonetheless, it doesn't mean that their temporal effect due to sin doesn't remain. Anyway, those are just a few thoughts for you, Helen. I appreciate it. And I send you my sincere condolences on the loss of your husband. May he rest in peace. I'm glad you gave us a chance to talk about this important topic. Let's go to Powell in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hello, Powell.
Yes, hello. Let me take you off speakerphone.
That'd be great.
Okay. I'm an old man, so I'm getting there you go. Sorry. So, I have a beef. I don't know. I have confusion. When I was listening to you earlier about the issues with people receiving communion under both species, some think it's right, some think it's don't. It seems to be a never-ending atmosphere of confusion among Catholics today. And, of course, I'm very old, and so I was taught when there's a problem, management is the problem. Management is there to make sure there's no problems. And I realize that life goes on and life changes some. But yeah, I've traveled a bit, and I've been in a few countries, and one thing I tell folks is that I always have a home. I always have a place I can go to, whatever country I'm in, whether I understand the language or not, because the Mass is certain. The order of the Mass is certain. The way it's said is certain. And I don't know how much longer that we can make that statement. A couple of examples is, like, I've been in a couple of churches lately that were, you know, where we say, for us men and for our salvation, the priest automatically leaves out, and I've seen parishioners leave out, for us, they now say, for us and our salvation.
Right.
Well, I understand what's going on and all that, but being politically, the point is this, eventually a trend is setting, you know, the tide is flowing faster and faster. And we can't just tell someone, well, if you don't like it here, go find another parish. I don't believe that. It never has been an answer in the Roman Catholic and perhaps the Eastern and Western Catholic Church.
Real quick, pal, we're just about out of time because I have to take a break. Could you bottom line this for me? I'm not sure what point you're making.
I don't know what point I'm trying to make. I guess I'm frustrated and disappointed with the direction of the church. You know, maybe the Latin Mass is the way to go. So,
yeah, I understand your frustration.
You listening to me.
I'm happy to, Powell. I understand your frustration. I think a lot of people, in one way or another, share it. But what I try to do is the advice that I give to others. In other words, I'm not going to suggest advice to somebody that I wouldn't take myself. So what I seek to do is to just focus on Christ, receive the sacraments, recognize that the church may be going through a lot of turmoil right now, but it's Christ's church, And I'm called to be faithful and patient and trust in Jesus and know that in the end, the church will come through whatever these problems are. For me, I'm trying to remain content in that. It doesn't mean I don't need to struggle against things that require struggle, but ultimately I can't change it. So I express my frustration to the Lord in prayer and then seek as best I can to trust in Him. Otherwise, you know, you can get eaten up with frustration and that of course is not good, you know, that's not good.
Then you wind up quitting or taking a sabbatical or in pretty good trouble there, rationalizing right. And all the rest of the good stuff. So,
right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much then.
You're most welcome, pal. Nice to chat with you. We're going to take a break and we'll come back with more of your phone calls right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
I don't know if you knew this, Cyrus, but Mattel, the toy maker, they make Barbies. They're getting into the activism business. British coronavirus vaccine developer Sarah Gilbert has many science accolades to her credit, but she now shares an honor with Beyonce and Marilyn Monroe and Eleanor Roosevelt. There's now a new Barbie doll in her likeness. You may say, who is Sarah Gilbert? Sarah Gilbert is a 59-year-old professor at Oxford and the co-developer of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. She's one of six women in the COVID-19 fight who have new Barbies modeled after them. I'm trying to read this with a straight face. Toymaker Mattel, Inc. is recognizing them with a line of Barbie role model dolls. Gilbert's Barbie shares her long auburn hair and oversized black glasses, and she wears a sensible navy blue pantsuit and white blouse. It's a very strange concept, having a Barbie doll created in my likeness, she said in an interview with Mattel. I hope it will be part of making it more normal for girls to think about careers in science. Among the honorees are an emergency room nurse, Amy O'Sullivan, who treated the first COVID-19 patient, and a few other folk. It's all COVID-19 related, though. And the girls want role models, and now they're getting them in the form of a Barbie doll. I wonder if a Barbie doll in a sensible navy blue pantsuit and oversized black glasses will be popular with the girls. Do you think your daughter would go for that?
I don't know. I think they're going to be, there's some stiff competition out there in the Barbie doll land because we're releasing the Patrick Madrid Barbie doll.
Na 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 na. Na, na, na. That's a new one. When did you get that,
well,
hotkey?
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure the Patrick Madrid, I don't think, we're not calling it a Barbie doll, though.
It's not a Barbie doll.
It's not a Barbie doll.
And it's better than a Ken doll.
Yeah.
This is the pull string Patrick Madrid doll, right? Where he says things?
That's something up with which I cannot put.
This, we need.
Sounds
this,
authentic.
It is. Yeah,
that sounds authentic.
I carry this thing with me everywhere.
Yeah. People want to know where they can buy the Patrick Madrid pull string doll. I don't know what to tell them. Do they have to buy it from you, or how do they get them?
Well, it hasn't gotten into mass production yet, so we're...
And where are my royalties? All right.
Mr. Sunshine, yay!
I got to get me one of these things. Yeah, what else have you got?
Oh, all right.
Give me one more.
All right, let me...
Pull the string.
You're on the air.
Yeah, kind of boring.
Right. Kinda. We're short on time, but welcome.
Okay, all right, whatever.
Men are different from women.
That would get me deplatformed off Twitter.
Yes, it would. Yeah, you're not selling these on Twitter.
Okay.
All right.
I got some phone calls I want to get to. Thank you for that, Cyrus. The comic relief is much appreciated. Before I get to the phone calls, though, I have another story I want to share. The White House is signaling new COVID-19 measures that are coming for people who are unvaccinated. Ahead of President Biden's announcement Thursday about new COVID-19 measures, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said there may be new measures that will be imposed on unvaccinated people. There are six steps the president is announcing. There will be new components. Some of that will be related to access to testing. Some will be related to mandates. Some will be related to how we ensure kids will be protected in schools. When asked about how the new steps would impact Americans' lives, she said it depends on if you're vaccinated or not. There will be new components, she said. It will, of course, impact people across the country, but we're also working together to get the virus under control, to return to our normal lives. Biden, who is scheduled to meet with his COVID-19 advisors, delivered a speech about 6 months ago saying the United States has made real progress against the virus. This article is rather lengthy. It's got a lot of stats and figures in it, so I won't bore you with those, but it is interesting to see how policy is being shaped right now along the lines of those who are and those who aren't vaccinated. And I suppose in the next week or so, we'll find out more about that. I just wanted to make you aware of it. Oh, one other thing, just in case. Celebrities are saying that they are, because they're up in arms over the pro-life legislation that just passed in Texas, that now they're going to boycott Texas. Oh boy. You know, and they, you know, they always say this, but they never actually do it. They promise that they will. Yeah, that's my reaction right there. That's exactly my reaction. I'm thinking about all the people who said, well, if so and so is elected president, I'm moving out of the country. But they don't when that person gets elected. They don't hold true to their promises. I wish they would. Feminist actress Patricia Arquette, and you're probably saying, who? Wasn't she in a movie sometime back in the 80s? She warned of a Hollywood boycott of Texas, saying, we will not stop until women have full equal rights in every state in America. We will boycott you. We will out-organize you. We will strike you. Uh-huh.
Boring. You're boring, yeah. Everybody. Quit boring, everyone.
I'm going to bore you a little bit longer. Cyrus, you do a very good Homer Simpson impersonation. So the singer Pink said, I'm in solidarity with people in Texas who as of today face an extreme 6-week abortion ban. This ban will be the blueprint for bans across the U.S. unless we do something about it. Comedian Amy Schumer said something similar. Alyssa Milano, as to be expected, said something similar. Reese Witherspoon. Does that name ring a bell? She played Johnny Cash's wife in Walk the Line. She's really ticked off, and she's going to boycott the heck out of Texas. She already said so. Eva Longoria? You have a yawn for her?
I'm out of yawns, man.
All right. Okay. I am too. I'm done with that. Let them boycott. Who cares? I mean, better that you move out of the country if that's really, I mean, if it really means that much to you. But please make good on your promise. Don't just threaten to do it and then not do it. Let's go to Jim in Shakopee, Minnesota. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Patrick. Hello, Jim. Great show.
Thank you. And I appreciate it.
And speaking of the Texas law, how many Supreme Court justices voted for and against? It was 5-4 decision. Do you know the names of the judges and how they voted?
Well, let's see. I know that Amy Coney Barrett and I'm trying to remember their first names. So Coney Barrett and Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito and Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh all voted not to hear the case. I know that Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor and Chief Justice John Roberts voted to hear it. And I don't remember now whether Breyer voted not to hear it or not, but they were in the minority in any case. The liberal justices were in the minority. But the ones that I mentioned up front. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
How many of those judges are Catholic?
Let's go through the list. Chief Justice John Roberts, Catholic. Justice Clarence Thomas, Catholic. Stephen Breyer, I do not know what his religious affiliation is. Samuel Alito, Catholic. Sonia Sotomayor, Catholic. Elena Kagan, I don't think she has a religion. I don't think she's religious. Neil Gorsuch, as I understand it, is Catholic. I'd have to double check on that. Brett Kavanaugh, same thing. I believe he is Catholic as well. And Amy Coney Barrett is definitely Catholic.
It seems. Very good. And I'd like you to comment on the hypostatic union, the hypostatic union. If you could comment on
that. That's a big switcheroo to go from the Supreme Court to the hypostatic union. Do you want me to define it? Is that what you want?
Yeah, define it. Give me a couple of comments on it.
Sure. So, go ahead, Jim. Okay, I thought you were saying something else. So the hypostatic union is a theological term the Catholic Church has developed as a way to describe what happened when the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. John chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then verse 14 says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. So by way of definition, the hypostatic union means that the person of the second person of the Trinity, God the Son, took to himself a perfect human nature, complete with all the components of a human nature, human soul, human will, human body, etc. And that was united perfectly and irrevocably with the divine nature. So the hypostasis, that technical term, refers to the one person, God the Son, dwelling in a divine and a human nature simultaneously and forever. We call that also the incarnation. So the term hypostatic union refers to the way in which the incarnation took place, such that the divine and the human natures were united permanently. Does that help?
It's kind of confusing that Christ had a soul, and yes, yet he's the Son of God. And it's sort of mind-blowing on how that can happen. But
yeah, the way to understand it, and I grant you, this is a very profound mystery that we can only understand a portion of. We can't understand all of it. But what we can understand includes the fact that by having a perfect human nature, he must have every aspect of human nature. So human nature includes a mind, a will, a body. So these are all things that are proper to a nature, in this case, a human nature. But the person who is the subject of the nature is God himself. So Jesus as God has not only his divine nature, but also the human nature as well. So there were two wills in Christ, the divine will and the human will. We have the mind of Christ in his divinity, knowing everything all at once forever, as well as his human mind, in which he had to learn things like how to walk and how to talk and how to do things that children learn how to do. In his human mind, he had to do all those things. But that's understandable, because having a perfect human nature, Jesus was complete. He wasn't missing anything in his human nature that you and I have, if that makes sense.
Patrick, one more thing. Who was that saint walking along the seashore? And he saw this little boy digging a hole in the sand, and he was running over to the water, cupping his hands and dumping the water in the hole. And the saint asked him, well, what are you trying to do? And he said, well, that's what you're trying to do by trying to understand the Trinity.
And, yeah, that's a story that's attributed to St. Augustine. And I'd have to look. I've known that story for a long time, but I have to go back and look at where the origin of that story comes from. But that's attributed to St. Augustine. And maybe when he was writing his De Trinitate, which was his treatise on the Trinity. And anyway, I'll have to leave it at that, Jim, but thank you for the three interesting questions. Let's go now to Chicago and talk to Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Jerry.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question. I'm reading an article here, The Satanic Temple to Challenge Texas Abortion Law, Citing Religious Freedoms.
Right.
How is the Satanic Temple a religion, or how is Satanism a religion?
Well, the Lucian Greaves, who's the guy behind it, and that's a fake name. I used to know what his real name is, but it doesn't matter. His stated goal is to try to thwart certain laws under the guise of being a religion. And in this case, with regard to Texas, what he has said is that by prohibiting abortions after 6 weeks' time, it is interfering with his and his members, the members of the Satanic Temple, with their religious right or for the right to the practice of their religion. And so their claim is that abortion is part of practicing their religion. And if the state of Texas is infringing upon that right, then they've got some constitutional problems. So that's the essence of what he's saying in that context. And this is, you know, it's a legal matter. They're registered as a religion, just like the Church of Scientology, which is not a church. They're registered as a religion. And so from a legal standpoint, you can just simply register that way if you go through all the hoops that the IRS sets up for you. So he himself has said, Jerry, that he doesn't believe in God. He doesn't believe in Satan. This is just a pretext to be able to accomplish and to exert pressure on laws and institutions that they don't like. That's what's really going on there.
Okay, what I don't understand is why isn't the Catholic Church challenging their designation as a religion?
Oh, the church has.
When
the church has challenged this, you know, many times. I think one of the more prominent examples was in Oklahoma City when the church, the Satanic Temple, they wanted to erect a statue of Baphomet, the half goat, half man statue with two children, one on either side, and they wanted to put that in. If I remember correctly, I think is they wanted it in the state house, along with other religious symbols. Now they themselves, they're only using the term religion as a pretext to exert political pressure. And so they don't really believe in God, at least according to their founder.
So their beliefs are not sincerely held?
No.
Which is what the Supreme Court defines a religion. It's a sincerely held belief, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is definitely a pretext. It's definitely it's a stratagem. There's no doubt about it. But from a strictly legal standpoint, they have the paperwork in order, so they can call themselves a religion.
I just find that unbelievable. They've also got tax-exempt status
yes.
as a religion, so contributors are getting a tax break. Avoid taxes by contributing to the Satanic Temple.
Welcome to 2021, Jerry. Welcome to 2021. We live in a topsy-turvy world.
I know. I'm just trying to figure out how to respond, because what it says is the Supreme Court has interpreted religion to mean a sincere and meaningful belief that occupies in the life of its possessor a place parallel to the place held by God in the lives of other persons. These people have clearly stated that their intentions are not to be parallel to the place held by God. They're in opposition to the place held by God.
Yeah,
so their actions are contradictory to the definition of religion that the Supreme Court has put forward or promulgated. So why aren't we, given the Supreme Court that we have, now I'm sure they'll pack it, if a case went before the Supreme Court to have the Satanic Temple declared an irreligion.
Well, those are legal matters that I don't have the knowledge to really comment on. I have to leave that up to the lawyers.
I was just interested in your opinion.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you, for what it's worth anyway. I feel your pain. I understand exactly where you're coming from. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Guess who's going to take over the now unoccupied U.S. airbase in Bagram in Afghanistan? I'll give you one guess, Cyrus. Can you guess who's going to take over? And it's not the Taliban.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know.
You were going to guess that. Well, China. Huh. What an amazing thing. This large, state-of-the-art, strategic Bagram Air Force Base that we spend who knows how many millions or billions of dollars putting into place. China is considering deploying military personnel and economic development officials to Bagram Airfield. This according to the U.S. News and World Report. The Chinese military is currently conducting a feasibility study, I'll bet they are, about the effect of sending workers and soldiers and other staff-related people to this place in Afghanistan. And you know what the other funny thing about this is? That the Taliban is like, come on in, guys. Come on in. We got this nice, shiny Air Force base. You guys can run it. So don't be surprised, because, you know, they're doing a feasibility study that, I mean, I'm laughing because what are you going to do? Cry or laugh? Bagram Air Force Base may be securely in Chinese hands in the not too distant future. That doesn't sound like a great idea to me. Does that sound like a great idea to you, Cyrus?
Right.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let's go to, is it Giselle or Grisel in Atlanta?
Grisel.
Grisel, welcome.
Hi, Patrick, and hi, Cyrus. I just have a comment about the CEO, or I don't know, the owner of Lyft.
Yes.
You know, most of the young people use Lyft, and most of the young people that I know are pro-lifers. So I don't have much followers, but I put it on Instagram, and I said, what would he do if all the pro-lifers decided not to use any more Lyft? You know, it's just an idea. That would be great. Where is he going to get $1 million? All right, just boycott him, you know, and that would be great. So that was my comment. Thank you for your show, and say hi to Cyrus.
I will tell Cyrus hello. I will say, Cyrus, hello from Grisel. She just said that, so.
Hello.
Hey, how are you? Thank you very much.
The Cyrus Simcoe fan club is now in order. The meeting has begun.
We have one member. This is all-time high.
I think Grisel would be a member, that's for sure. Thank you, Grisel. Let's go to Barbara in Dallas. Hi, Barbara.
Hey, the message yesterday that was read, the gospel that was read yesterday, was the genealogy of St. Joseph, the husband of Mary.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that, because why did they read that, not the genealogy of Mary? Because Jesus did not have the DNA of Joseph. He had the DNA of Mary. So right. I don't understand that.
Well, the church has a three-year cycle of readings, and in the cycle we're in now, you get the genealogy that follows St. Joseph's lineage. Later in that cycle, you'll get to the genealogy that follows Mary. That's in the Gospel of Luke. Now, the reason that both genealogies are given is because, you are correct, the DNA or the bloodline that Jesus has comes from King David through the lineage of the Blessed Virgin Mary. But the lineage or the genealogy of St. Joseph is there to establish his legal claim to being a descendant of St. Joseph, because the legal status of the son, or daughter for that matter, came from the father. And so even though St. Joseph did not have any physical connection with Jesus, he was his foster father, yet even so, he is the link for the legal status that Jesus had. So that's why the two genealogies are shown side by side.
Thank you.
Good. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara. I appreciate the call. How about Ann now in Joliet, Illinois? Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. Patrick, I'm looking for advice on choosing a helping my daughter to choose a college. Okay. And we preferred a Catholic college, but I am concerned about the strict mandates on the COVID vaccine. She has had COVID, and I am concerned about her having to get a shot. And it appears that the Christian colleges and the public colleges are not as strict on that. And it's just very confusing what to do. I know some of the colleges on the Newman Guide are all the way across the country. So that's another difficulty. So just looking for some advice.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm glad you already know about the Newman Guide. I was going to suggest that to you from the Cardinal Newman Society. They rank Catholic colleges, and they give lots of specific details about their, you know, the courses that they have and the amenities and things like that. So that's good that you're already familiar with them. I would suggest that you get in touch, for example, with Christendom College or with Ave Maria University or for the University of Mary. Those are three who come to mind, and also friends of the network. And just talk with them. Have a come-and-see weekend where you can go and visit them. It actually is not as burdensome as you might think, and I don't know if you have had any older children go through college yet, but it's not as burdensome as you might think for a child. If you're living in Illinois and you've got a daughter, for example, at Christendom College, just to use an example, in Virginia, it's not that far, and it can actually be a very good experience for them to be away from home and not just down the street. There are advantages for that for both them and for the parents. So to find out what the specific requirements are in any given Catholic college, I would say get in contact with them and ask the questions. You won't be the first one to ask those questions, and they'll have answers for you. And then that will help you make your determination.
Okay. Okay. That helps. I guess we're just a little leery on going so far, but I'll try and think about that, the other advantages of it as well.
Yeah, there are advantages. I mean, obviously the heartstrings, you know, when your child who's leaving home is far from you, but it's one of those rites of passage. And interestingly, it's not only a rite of passage for the son or daughter going off to college, it's also a rite of passage for mom and dad who are now moving into a new phase of life where their children are not close at hand. That's a natural progression, it seems to me.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
I'm glad. Thank you, Ann. God bless you. Let's go to Don in Dallas, Texas. Hi, Don.
Hi, Patrick. I was just thinking, the actresses that you were mentioning and the performers, Pink, they all are mothers. And I just wonder how much they support abortion. Like, is late-term abortion okay? Would they boycott the states that allow, you know, abortion up to the day of birth? Or are they okay with no parental consent? They're all moms, so they're fine with their daughters not having any asking them permission or telling them, or should they boycott those states as well? Like, I'm just curious always about how far they're willing to go.
I don't know anything about the personal lives or views of these women who are mentioned in that article. So I couldn't even tell you a Pink song. If I heard it, I wouldn't know who it was. So I don't have any kind of understanding of how they would answer your question, but I'm aware of people like Alyssa Milano, who is very vocal in her support of abortion. And if I had to guess, I would guess they probably would at least say that they are supportive of all these different extreme things. My sense of it, Dawn, though, is that they're doing this as a form of virtue signaling, because they want to be seen in the public as somebody who's cool, somebody who's, you know, part of the mainstream. I wonder if any of these celebrities feel like, oh, gee, if I don't speak out, will people assume that I'm okay with it, and then they won't come and see my movie or they won't buy my album? I would suspect there's a personal and profit motive involved at some deeper level for them to feel compelled to speak out. I mean, Alyssa Milano, to take her as an example, she was basically a has-been. She was on a TV show quite a while ago, and you never saw her name. She was not in anything that I took any notice of. And it seems like she found a way to get back in the public eye again by spouting off her nonsense about abortion. And so she sort of got back into the public view. Whether that was her intention all along or not, I don't know. But I would guess, Don, if they were asked that question, they would say yes publicly, that they support all these different things, even though they're mothers. You know, in essence, they're saying this about potential future daughters and sons of theirs.
So disappointing.
It is. But you know what? We don't look to them for anything. We don't look to them for leadership. They're anti-leaders. They're leading people astray. The people who are gullible enough to be swayed by what Pink thinks about abortion, or Alyssa Milano, to think that somebody would be that gullible and dull to be swayed by a celebrity, even a C-list celebrity like that. I mean, what can you do? That's why we have to keep speaking the truth in love, if you ask me, Don.
I agree, but it is really difficult when you have, you know, friends posting on all these social media sites about the law and how terrible it is, and, you know, it's hard to get into the conversation with a lot of people.
Yeah. Do your best. Jesus said when you go into a town and you preach the gospel, if they won't listen to you, then move on. You know, do your best. Try to plant the seed. If you can, great. If you can't, that's okay. It's up to them. But don't agonize over it. Do the good that you can, and then if they won't receive it, then just move on. That's between them and God.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate it. I think, let's see if we can quickly get to Raphael in California. Hi, Raphael. You got 20 seconds. Go for it.
Yes, I just wanted to encourage the lady who's sending her daughter to university to choose the Catholic university. I send my daughter to North Dakota, and I live here in California, and it's well worth it.
And she's a distance away from you, but it's still good, right?
That's correct.
Got it. Thank you for being succinct. I appreciate that. This is me signing off for now. I'll see you again soon. Please pray for me. I'll pray for you. Oh.